Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 94 of Season 7 of Movie Rob, the daily podcast where we yip our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dave Palace from 5 Minutes of Mystery.
Yeah, I'm back. We are getting ready to jump.
Yes, we are, but that's only going to be tomorrow. Tomorrow, we'll have to wait until tomorrow for that. All right, minute 94 begins with Zeus adamant that he is correct, and ends with hook, line, and sinker. So we ended things yesterday with Zeus arguing with John that he can make the jump onto the ship. You know, this is a pretty big jump, but hey, why not? And so John is telling him it's just not going to work. You're not going to be able to do this. I mean, he basically just says to him, you're out of your mind. It's 100 feet down to the deck. And he goes, nah, but not to the crane. It isn't. And then John goes, The cables would cut you in half, which I think that's a great line, especially when you know what's going to happen in this movie. You know, but just mentioning that to us, you know, just like in passing. And then he goes, I can make it. And he goes, bull. And then he goes, get down, get down. And he goes, look in the back of the car for some gloves. Yeah. So, you know, John gets convinced pretty quickly here. You know, it takes just a few seconds for John to say, okay, why don't we try it? And he goes, there must be gloves in the back of the car because, you know, why wouldn't they have gloves in the back of this car? You know, to me, it's just a throwaway line. You know, like why should this have gloves in the back of the car? Especially the type of gloves that they're going to need.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, I mean, why would hitmen have workman gloves? They would, if anything, they would have, like, latex gloves, like, disposable ones if they needed to, like, not leave fingerprints on. Those are the kind of guys.
That's right. These are hitmen.
The kind of professional gloves they would have. So you are right. But I'm guessing.
Unless they stole the truck from somebody, which I'm assuming they didn't. They probably rented it or bought it.
So, yeah, maybe, like, wherever they rented or got this truck from, there was one of those, like, those half seat toolboxes that sit behind. Like, I remember having that. My dad had work trucks and stuff. You know, you obviously had jockey boxes that were locked and stuff on the back. But, like, sometimes you would just have a small toolbox with small, miscellaneous, like, these are the tools specific for the vehicle. And then you would have, like, the toolboxes specifically for the jobs you're going out to do. So it's kind of, so, like, I would think, yeah, you would have work gloves and, like, you flip the seat down in the cab, and that's where that is. So it's like, it's plausible. It's not, of all the crazy theories we've had this week,
that's
the most reliable one. It's like, okay.
Fine. That's right. I mean, there is a winch at the beginning in the front of the truck. Now, what I find really amazing is this truck is so banged up, but the winch, it looks perfect. You know, it's immaculate.
Yes. Good point. You think the winch
is clean? And, you know, remember it was just pouring, and they were in the mud, and they were splashing mud all over the place. But here, you can even read, you know, the instructions on the winch, which tells you, okay, in order to engage it, you turn it this way and stuff like that. I mean, it's just it's amazing how clean it looks here. But oh well.
Yeah. The only thing that's rusted is like the bottom frame that the welded thing.
That's right. Maybe the rain washed it off there. You know, the rain just washes all the dust, the dirt away. You know. And then John starts playing with it and pulling the cable a little bit from there. And then the shot changes and we get to see a counter. We get to see a 1990s computer counter. You know, showing us that the things are counting down from 1445. You know, and they have a 5-digit abort code. How nice.
Yeah, and I have you talked about, now I don't want to step on the same information other guests might have been saying, but have you talked about the kind of the mirroring of Charlie to Theo? Have you talked about the Charlie Theo mirroring?
No, we haven't talked about that at all.
Because I think this is a great scene to kind of mirror it. Like, Charlie's wearing the headset. He's looking at wires and counters and timers and a screen the same way Theo was. But Theo was doing it for evil and robbery. And Charlie's doing it to save kids. So it's like McTiernan's able to mirror that. Like, we got a guy who's a tech guy, but he's a good guy. And he's, like, ready to, like, he's not wearing any bomb vest here. He is like, if I do this wrong, I know it's going to go, and I'm going to be here at ground zero, but we got to save these kids.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I didn't even think about that. Never thought about that connection. That's great.
Once I saw the headset, I was like, oh, my God. Like, McTiernan's kind of – he's mirroring Charlie to Theo, and it's crazy. It's so cool, yeah.
And think about the fact that he's singing a Christmas song also.
Yeah.
You know, because Charlie sings – six booby traps, four dead ends, and a partridge in a pear tree. So.
And then we cut. Yeah. And then Theo, what he does, night before Christmas, all through the house.
Now the creature was stealing, except the four apples coming in a standard two by formation. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like you know, McTiernan definitely knows he's giving it to us, like, big, bold letters of just, like, Charlie and Theo are two sides of the same coin. Both technical geniuses, but, like, one did it for evil and one did it for good.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I never even thought about that. Well, all right. That's fascinating. So he's singing a version of the song, The 12 Days of Christmas. So me being Jewish, I have an out. You know, I don't need to know these things. But do you know what the 12 Days of Christmas are? Like, what are the let's go back a little further. Do you know when the song was first created? When was it first published?
I would say, probably like maybe a 1700s English like story.
Perfect.
Because it's really religious, so it could be in the Protestant religion. Like a Protestant could say it and not reference God.
Okay, it was in 1780 in a book called The Mirth Without Mischief. That was published in London that year.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's the ballpark. Good.
Yeah. Okay. So now what do you have on the 12 days?
I mean, like,
And it does change. It does change over the years. You know, you have the original of what it is, and then it changes.
I mean, obviously, everyone remembers five gold ring. Everyone probably remembers up to five. So it would be like, partridge in a pear tree, two turtle doves. Forget the third one. Five gold rings. Four calling birds, three French. Yeah, you gotta sing it out. Four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. So I feel like I can safely say 12, 10. I can't remember any of his. I know Piper's piping has evolved. Ladies dancing has evolved. And I think what's interesting about this is
Ladies Dancing is 11, Piper's Piping is 10.
Okay. I think it's Drummers Drumming.
Very good. That's there also, number 9.
Lords of Milking or something?
Lords of Leaping.
Lords of Leaping.
And Maids of Milking. So I'll give you both
maids
those.
Maids of Milking. Okay,
so you're only missing two. You're missing 6 and 7.
Yeah. Hey. 7, Swans of Swimming.
Very good.
6, Geese of Lay.
All right. Excellent. See? You knew
I had to sing it out. Once I sang it out, it worked. Okay, yeah, I locked it that way. You can't count up. It's impossible to count up the 12 days. You have to start as high as you can and then go keep going and work your way down to 1.
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah. I do love these gifts, but I can think of, like, well, if you were in England and even one of these things was presented to you as a gift, it really would be. You have a lady dancing, you have a musician, like you're thinking about it and you're like, oh my God, I have a whole band. Like this person on the 12 days, they've given me all these bands and, you know, all these gold rings, which I could think would be like gold ring could be like a marriage of bonding of like, you know, like, hey man, you and I, like I see you as a good friend and, you know, rings. The two turtle doves, I mean, I think most millennials my age, we're going to think of the two turtle doves that Kevin gets for the homeless pigeon lady in Home Alone 2. I think that's like the most like two turtle doves I can think of outside of the 12 days of Christmas. It's like he gave her the turtle dove, he's got a turtle dove, and they'll always be friends. Like I always remember that.
Right. Okay. All right. So now how many different items are given in the song?
Okay, well, if, oh my God, it would be if it's an incredibly large number. I don't know the, it's a, it seems like a Simon puzzle because you're adding in every day is the previous thing plus another thing. So it's just like by the end, the part you have like so many, you have 12 partridges in a pear tree. You would have 24. I don't even know if this is right. But I'm hoping my math is right. So it's like one, yeah, 12 days of Christmas. You would have at least 12 partridges, and you have double that for two of the turtle doves, and then you just have to keep doubling it. I think it's doubling, or
Yes,
no, you
you are
have to,
doubling. Yeah.
oh, you are doubling, because then it'd be three, and then now it's like three of them for every 12 days, and then five for every 12, and four, and so I don't know, man. These numbers are getting high in my head, man. I'm not a great numbers. I'm a good
Okay,
puzzle
so
guy, but
it's
I'm not a great like math guy.
a total of 364 items.
Okay, and that's all the dancers, that's the singing, that's the ladies, that's the
Everything.
rings, that's everything. Okay.
Okay, and
Ah, man.
how much do you think the cost of all of these things was in 1984? If you were to buy all 364 items.
In 1980, why 1984? I want to know why
Because that,
84 you
okay,
chose
because
it.
1984 is the year that that someone started keeping track, and they called it the Christmas Price Index. And every year since
Oh,
then, they've talked
wow.
about how much it costs, and therefore you can see the change in the cost of living over the course of the last 4 years. Okay, we're not going to go into all the years. We'll just go, in 1984 and then 2023, just to see the jump between them.
I mean, I think the biggest thing you have to think about is that the wages of all the human performers, the drummers, the ladies, the dancing, the lords dancing, the maids of milking, like all those people, like their wages are going to be like is what's going to add up because you have probably
Right. Well,
like
because
a like you're paying for wages.
you're hiring all these people. You're not buying them.
Yeah, they're not buying them, but like yeah, their wage to work 12 days, is just I feel like I mean I don't I in 1984 like I don't know what like. It'd be like, what does it cost a week in wages in 1984 for about like 100 people or something? Like that's like the math in I'm doing in my head. Like that's like the most like rational thing I could explain. So,
Okay, so
I mean, is that am I
the
close to that? Like,
original again, just it gives me the number here. I don't know how it's broken down and stuff like that, but
oh, goodness gracious.
so from 1984, it would have cost $12,623 in order to buy all of these
I was gonna
items.
say 10,000.
Right. Okay,
Okay.
so let's say it's 10, so 12,000. How much is that in 2023, which was the last Christmas that they did this testing of?
I mean, I would say all this could be like 100, over 100,000.
Okay, so the total cost of the goods and services in 2023 is 46,729, but if you're buying every one of the 364 items, it comes out to $201,972.
Oh, there it is. That yes. Okay, yes. That's the number I was like, that's gonna be crazy. 'Cause yeah, just like all I'm sure, from outside of minimum wage or something like that. Like, it's a performer, so I'm like, that's not a cheap that shouldn't be too cheap of a job you're giving as a gift. It would have to be something nice, so they're on a higher level.
Correct.
So that makes sense. And obviously gold, obviously animals are probably like make probably pricier now. Just the cost of farming and stuff. So yeah, that all makes sense. Well, I think we should mention if we're talking about this is I think that my favorite thing is the 12, is it the 12 Pains of Christmas, I believe it's called. That's a favorite song that comes on the radio. I always love hearing. If you never heard it, I think it's called 12 Pains of Christmas, but it's like batteries not included, and it's like the husband going like rigging up these lights. And it's like, sometimes it's just a kid screaming, I want an action figure, I want something. Like, it's just like, it doesn't say what it is, but clearly it's like one of the 12 Pages of Christmas is your kids screaming about like needing certain things or wanting certain things for Christmas. I just love like batteries not included. I think it's like, Like, and there's like, I can't remember all of them, but if you've never heard it, it's so funny. 12 Pains of Christmas, because it's so relatable, even if it's not Christmas parts. It's just like the bullshit, just getting through the holidays, the in-laws and stuff. I think so. It's like meeting my, you know, hanging with my in-laws is like one of them. I just love that. But I love the, like, near the end, right as he's rigging up these lights, he's like, one goes out, they all go out. It's my favorite part. Just guys screaming. One light goes out, they all right. go out.
Okay, so here, I'll tell you what all the 12 pains of Christmas is.
Gosh.
All right, the first thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me is finding a Christmas tree. The second thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, rigging up the lights and finding a Christmas tree. The third thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, hangovers, ringing up the lights and finding a Christmas tree. Yes. The fourth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, sending Christmas cards, hangovers, ringing up the lights and finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing of Christmas that's such a pain to me, 5 months of bills, sending Christmas cards, hangovers, ringing up the lights and finding a Christmas tree. The sixth thing of Christmas that's such a pain to me, facing my in-laws, 5 months of bills. Oh, I hate those Christmas cards, hangovers, ringing up those lights and finding a Christmas tree. The seventh thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, the Salvation Army, facing my in-laws, 5 months of billing, sending Christmas cards. Oh, geez, I'm trying to rig up these lights and finding a Christmas tree. The eighth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, I want a transformer for Christmas. Charities and what do you mean, your in-laws? 5 months of bills. Oh, making out these cards. Honey, get me a beer. What? We have no extension cords and finding a Christmas tree. The ninth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, finding parking spaces. Daddy, I want some candy. Donations, facing my in-laws. 5 months of bills, writing out those Christmas cards. Hangovers, now why the hell are they blinking? And finding a Christmas tree. The 10th thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, batteries not included, no parking spaces. Buy me something, get a job, you bum. Oh, facing my in-laws, 5 months of bills. Yo-ho, sending Christmas cards. Oh, geez, look at these. One light goes out, they all go out, and finding a Christmas tree. The 11th thing of Christmas that's such a pain to me, stale TV specials, batteries not included, no parking spaces. Dad, I got to go to the bathroom. Charities, she's a witch, I hate her. 5 months of bills. Oh, I don't even know half these people. Oh, who's got the toilet paper? Huh? Get a flashlight. I blew a fuse. And finding a Christmas tree. The 12th thing of Christmas that's such a pain to me, singing Christmas carols, stale TV specials, batteries not included, no parking, charities, wah-wah, getting make them dinner. Got to make them dinner. 5 months of bills. I'm not sending them this year. That's it. Shut up, you. Fine. You're so smart. You rig up the lights. And finding a Christmas tree. So there you go. It's by Bob Rivers.
God, I love it. And I love it. I love that song. Whenever it comes on the radio, my dad and I just love laughing at it. But yeah, that's just, I love that ringing up the lights guy, just slowly getting more and more mad. I love it. Like it's out, they all go out.
Definitely
I
works.
Love that.
So, you know, we get a few seconds of Charlie just sitting here, slowly going through this stuff, doing it very calmly, taking a little sip of water, you know, as he does it also. And he has a little bit of, he has wire cutters, and he goes, okay, honey, let's dance.
he reminds me, yeah, he has the attitude of Oliver Platt in Executive Decision, you know, just this like, oh boy, oh geez. I think it's great. Just something about bomb technician character actors in movies. Just you got like, don't skim on them. They are great. Don't just make them a dumb nerd guy in a room. Make them a little funny of a character.
Right.
Give them, I said, that little taste of Theo, we don't know a lot about, but every time we cut to him, he's always got a smirk, a grin, a line, a quip, some smart aleck thing, and it's great. And Charlie came in at the beginning of this film so excited. He was excited about the bomb. I was like, this guy's been like waiting to like see a crazy thing, and I'm sure he's just been busy dealing with like maybe like word of like car bombs or something, like real basic kind of stuff, like ignition, boom, blow up, like ATF stuff. And here he is like, oh my God, you can't believe it. This is a chemical. It's smart. It's like someone really worked on it hard. Did you ever talk about like who you think designed these bombs? Like, did Simon design these bombs? Like did
it? Well, we talked about the fact that it doesn't sound very plausible to have this type of, of contraption. It's cool to see it on in a
Yeah.
movie, but it just doesn't really work. And that's why in the script it's all C4. The script doesn't even mention this type of thing.
Yeah, I'm glad they did. I'm glad because I think adding a little bit of this epoxy C4 or epoxy explosive science bit of it kind of adds just a tad to the fantasy that we don't have to think about real world bombing, especially in New York, because I'm like the first World Trade Center bomb attack probably was like what, like 2 years prior to this.
Yeah.
So it's like,
Correct.
bombs in New York probably like is a little of a soft spot. Obviously, we're years away from 9/11, but just like the idea of like a terrorist blowing something up, I think if we added this like the sci-fi ability to it, it's great for storytelling. The mixes, that's what you got to know, because the C4 brick just sits there. And they already did that in the first movie. They already had
That's
C4
right.
in there, so it's kind of like, oh, we did C4 again. It's so great to be like up to ante now. It's the scientific chemical process. It shows like the modern age of terrorism. They're like, it's not just, military bombs. Now it's now it's sci-fi rigging, and it adds a little bit to that technophobia that McClane they kind of hint at throughout the franchise. They really lean into it in the fourth, but at least in these films, it's like a guy who's like he's a very analog man. Like he can't work
That's
a
right.
fax machine.
That's true. And at this point, the scene changes. We're back in the school, watching the kids. As you pointed out earlier this week, we get to see the chain, with Lambert at the head of them. And Lambert goes, "All right, we're gonna have sort of a race. When I say go, I want you all to run like crazy. All of you follow the police officers and the firemen. You guys are my front runners, okay?" And then Walter like walks by him and he goes, "Walter, I think we're cutting this a little thin." And he goes, "No, Joe, we're gonna wait. McClane still might get the code." Now, what's very interesting is Cobb has changed his view of McClane, slowly throughout this movie. He here is very confident that McClane's gonna get the code, even though at the beginning of the movie he was lambasting him and willing to throw him to the wolves. At with Simon.
Yeah, I think they realized like that. When McClane, when he's given a task, when he's given something to work towards, something that's pissed him off, it's like they all know that like John can piss people off, but it's like if you piss John off, John won't stop. He won't just sit down and go like, oh well, it is what it is. He's like, no, like I'm gonna get that thing done. They all know. They know John's a father, so they know that like John isn't half-assing this. John knows that like there's a lot of parents that are scared as shit right now that their kids might get blown up. And I think once again, not just that wire. I think it's amazing the opening shot. You're following Walter's body as he's crunched and he's tight. He's trying to get past these kids, and you kind of see how thin these hallways are. They can't just flood the hallways of the kids. They can barely get two kids in through the hallway where a man can barely get through them. That's how tight this hallway is. These
That's
nine,
right.
8-year-olds, they have to trust that these kids aren't going to trip over each other getting out of the hallway. It really adds that tension of just like when Walter says that, he's like, I'm looking at these kids. I don't know how fast they can really be. When we start bopping, these bombs might go off. And I get why he is nervous about it. And I love that this shot of just how tight and narrow it is. So much of the frame is just choking Walter as he's coming up the stairs. And it keeps so close on them. It really shows how, and like, with the firemen there too, like everyone's boxed in right against each other, and everyone's just like, and everyone's trying to act calm in front of these kids, but it's just like, like that guy with the mustache, he's got this flat face, like, hey man, am I going home tonight? Like, it's just like, should I, should I be like starting to double check, call my lawyer, have the will checked? It is. It is like, I don't want, I know a lot of people throw around like the propaganda stuff, and I understand why they do that, but I really feel like this movie is a real shows an honest show of the police force and obviously the firemen and all the other just civilians of New York, where it's like it gives that great feeling that you get at the end of Spider-Man, where it's like everybody's uniting together, with this tragedy coming. So, it really is good. I mean, when he goes outside throughout these next clips and stuff, and talking to everyone outside, everyone's like prepared that at any moment this building's gonna blow up, but they're like, it's so important we need to get these kids out. Like,
That's
like
right.
this is the most important thing right now that the police, the Metro Squad and everything are going to do. And right. Just like thinking about it, like they probably had to call the bomb squad and outside of Ricky and be like, okay, this building explodes. What can we do? And they're probably like, I don't know, put like body armor on a bunch of buses and use them as like mobile wall cover. You know, like maybe we'll pull out some of our like vans and like SWAT vans and we'll block. So it's like they had to think about all this. But like this building blows up. Like how do we block these kids who are getting hit with shrapnel of like bricks and mortar coming at them?
Forget about that. So, the explosion is gonna be massive. They're not going anywhere. You know, everything's gonna be vaporized.
Yeah. So it's just like I guess it's kind of one of these things where it's like
let's give them a chance. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Without knowing the answer to this film, like if you were a parent watching this for the first time, you're nervous. You were like, oh my god, like Simon's a monster. That's what you're saying. Simon is a monster.
Yes,
you don't know the full plan yet, nor does John or Zeus.
Right. We leave the school and we're back with John and Zeus, and we see that John is trying to hook the cable onto the crane, and he goes, line me up with the crane. There, right there. All right. I see it. Right there. You're okay. This is gonna take a miracle. Keep your fingers crossed. Swing it. Come on. You almost got it. Almost. Yeah. All right. You know, it's I love that we're getting like the cheering in the background, you know, that the way that they're doing this. But you'd also think that the cable hitting the crane is gonna be making so much freaking noise. You know, we'll get more into that tomorrow, but you know, it doesn't make sense that he's doing this so quietly.
Yeah, I just have to assume that the guys who are patrolling the boat lower, they're either, you know, most of the insider and most of the guys who are probably patrolling outside are just, there's enough ambient noise of traffic and stuff. I don't realize, you hear a bunch of honky traffic, but they probably don't realize it's because McLean's blocked a bridge right now while he's doing that hook. So it's like, they probably don't, they don't really hear the clanging of, the cables are clanging. They don't think like, you know, who would think, oh, who's going to climb down a boat under a bridge? Like, who's crazy enough for that?
That's right. They don't know John McClane.
No doubt. But yeah.
All right. So that's all I have for this minute. You have anything else for this minute?
No. I think my favorite, once again, my favorite shot of this movie is when they show how cramped and tight the school corridors are.
Yeah, they definitely do that really well. So the script. The script actually has nothing here from this minute because none of this takes place in the script. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something has happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to a story about revenge or sibling rivalry. So, Dave, you hinted to me before we were recording that you have a good story. So I've been anticipating it all day. What can you what have you got to tell us?
So, all right, I will not be naming names, but I will be telling you the anecdote. When I was in school, I was in the musicals and the plays and stuff. And when I was like a sophomore, one of the seniors, he was like the lead actor in this musical. And obviously there's a lot of dancing, a lot of singing, a lot of so forth. So I would say he's top billed in that sense. And I was just, you know, sophomore, I was doing my best, you know, just we're in the play musical, you know, we're in the high school musical. And I just remember like there was like a maybe an after I just remember throughout rehearsal he would do some teasing. He would like tease me a little bit, me a little hazing. And I remember I remember we went to Friendly's at one point, like the cast went to Friendly's at one point. He like, I don't know if it was after a show or rehearsal or whatever it is. I don't know how we got there even, but whatever. I remember like he put salt in my lemonade when I went to the bathroom and I came back. It's just ruined, you know. And like lemonade was like usually one of those things you don't get a free refill. So I had to like make a whole production of the waitress be like, look, you know, I had to like kind of like, you know, get up and go to the waitress. I felt embarrassed to be like, hey, someone pranked me and put salt in my glass. And I'm like, I know who it was, but I was just like, you know, can I have another one? I had to kind of be like, all right, man, you got me. And I remember, like, during one of the rehearsals, I remember they were doing some kind of dance. They were rolling around on the ground. And I remember I was moving a table. Somebody else asked me to move a table. And I purposely, like, I put one of the legs of the table right where his shin would roll into. So I like knocked his shin. So I heard him was like, oh, so table. And then I moved the table, right? So I like I get him back for that. And then I remember another time we're at a diner and I remember he's like flicking like paper balls and maybe like, you know, pieces of like gum and tin foil, like flicking them out my, you know, my back of the head. And I'm like, all right, man, you got me. All right. I'm just trying to enjoy, you know, I'm not even at his table. Like I'm at a different table. Like, I'm not bothering him or anything. Minding my own damn business. And I remember he's doing it too. And I'm like, I felt like I gave him a good enough warning. So what I did is while I'm talking to people at the table at this diner, in my palm, I'm just shaking salt and pepper into my palm. Just calmly grabbing it, talking to them. I'm not making a production out of it, not trying to freak anyone out. And I remember watching the film The Missing with Tommy Lee Jones and Cate Blanchett. And at one point, Tommy is tracking one of the kidnappers of his daughter, and he gets hit by one of like the native the tribe's kidnappers, and they blow sand in his face. So that's I was inspired to do it. You know, movies taught me how to be violent to people,
of course,
as they should. So what I do is I calmly, like without making a big deal, I kind of like walked over. And I kind of walked to, I was like behind Joe or something. And I said, Joe, when he turned, ooh, I blew the salt and pepper right into his eyes. And so he's on the ground screaming, just screaming blood. And so I go, are we done, Joe? Are we done? And I do that. I do like the flat voice, like I'm the serial killer voice, because I'm trying to do like the prison thing of just like take out the top dog in the prison yard kind of thing and make a production out of it. And I kind of look around the table to everyone else, like all the seniors, I go, are we done, Joe? Are we done? And then I just kind of walked back to my seat and sat down. And he didn't. And I think he apologized for that show. So it's like I had to get my revenge. I had to kind of like put a sock in it to tell him like I will go so hard, Joe. You know. So, but like I said, that was high school. So
all right, you know, is what it is. That is a great story. Thank you very much for that. So why don't you once again tell people where they can find Dave Fowkes?
Well, you want to hear more crazy stories of madness and chaos, you can check out what Casanova's up to on 5 Minutes of Mystery, where I talk the 1999 superhero comedy ensemble Mystery Men.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to my new podcatcher. You might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on Instagram. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.